we are up to Aleph Yud Gimel. Okay, Dine Halva, Perek Aleph, Seif Yud Gimel. And we start now by talking about the priority between what could be called a straight loan, meaning a loan where you simply lend the funds and want to get paid back, and a heter iska loan, a loan which you convert into an investment so that you're able to make some kind of profit off of the loan. Sorry?
Without heter iska, without charging interest.
Right, no, it's not interest. You can lose the loan also that way. It's an investment. So the question is there a priority between the two of them in terms of what you offer? So, where it says Seif Yud Gimel, it's page Zion.
So, this is a new topic, isn't it?
Yes.
So, the heter iska, in my ignorance, I thought that was a way of making money out of lending money, and that was added later, but it sounds like these are two topics that were there right from the start.
A heter iska, essentially, is just a different way to structure a loan, doing it as an investment, in which you say, iska literally is business, it's an investment. So the idea is that instead of saying, I am lending you $1,000 to pay back to me at the end of whatever, I'm investing $1,000 in your venture, and in the event that your venture goes up in value, I expect to get a dividend. If it goes down in value, I may lose.
So was this a way out of doing straight loan, not of providing the interest?
It's a way in which you can make back more than you provide.
But was it done to avoid the notion that you were charging interest?
Yeah,
was it always there right from the start as a
The idea of investments was always permitted.
No, but is it a way of charging? People are used. My limited understanding is people use it as a way of charging interest,
right,
in all but name.
Right, but what
was that the original? That wasn't the original. It can't have been the original.
Again, always investments were always permitted.
Right,
you could always invest and make a profit on your investment. What's novel here is simply structuring a loan to be like an investment, even where it doesn't fit the normal investment profile. So that, you know, normally an investment means there's a farmer and I'm going to acquire a share in the proceeds by investing a certain amount in the startup funds that the farmer uses to buy his grain, to buy whatever he needs to buy, hire workers, whatever it is. That's a real partnership and a real investment. This loan can be done for even things that are not obviously investment material. You know, for example, someone's going to buy a house. So I'm going to lend him the money he needs in order to be able to put down his down payment on the house. Where is my profit going to come from? Well, maybe if the house appreciates. Like, you have to, it's not simple and straightforward that this should work as an investment, but that's what we're doing, is converting it into an investment type of thing. The big test of the heter iska is what happens in the event that the investment doesn't pay off. What happens in the event that he goes bankrupt? Are you going to demand from him the return of your capital? If it's a real investment, you have no right to make that demand. So that's where things get dicey, and those have been litigated in Basin. Okay. So, Yud Gimel. Im ikar parnasaso behalva'a la'akum beribis. Eino chayav la'halvos li'yisrael b'chinam. First of all, if you make your living by lending money to people who are not Jewish and charging interest, we talked about this a little bit last time also, if that's the way you make your living, so you are not obligated to lend money to Jews and not charge interest. You know, this is sort of the classic question of at what point chesed, at what point kindness ends up being not only an act of chesed, but sort of an act of sabotage to yourself. You know, let me give you a different scenario. Let's say you are a caterer. Okay? The way you make your living is by cooking meals that you then sell to people, and people are able to buy them off of you, right? Whether for events or whatever it is. So someone comes to you and says, you know, there's a fellow who needs food and he can't afford it. Wouldn't it be great if you would donate food to him? So you might say, well, sure, I have a certain amount left at the end of every run, and I'll give that. But if you're going to give straight meals that you're producing, you're now damaging your business. It's sort of more than chesed. Potentially, you are going to damage your business prospects by giving away the meals that you produce. Or if you have someone who is I'm blanking on the words, on a funeral director. So you say to him, well, you know, this person was a pauper. I think that you should do it all for free. But because it's his business, it's more than just chesed for him now. He's potentially damaging his livelihood. So it's a harder thing for people to do. Similarly, if you have someone who normally lends out money for interest, and now you say to him, well, I want you to now do loans as chesed, he's going to say, but this is my business. This is how I make my living in the first place. It's easy for someone who doesn't do this for a living to do it once as chesed. It's another thing if you're going to now tell him that he has to do his livelihood as chesed. Right? That's the idea. This comes up in the caterer context a lot for Jews who are caterers and members of shuls. And so the shul will come to them and say, can you give us a deal on whatever it is? But this is how they make their living. It's not simple and straightforward for some for them to say we're going to do this. Okay.
It's very similar to what we learned. If there is an opportunity to make a profit immediately, then this person obviously has it all the time every day.
Right. So this is an outgrowth of the previous discussion. The only difference was that in the previous discussion, it was a one-shot deal that you had this interest opportunity, whereas here, this is somebody who does this all the time. Like, this is his living. Ella in Cain, but he continues with a disclaimer. He says, you don't have the obligation to extend the free loan unless the Jew who is coming to you is a pauper and he needs money for bread. In that case, we're going to say, I don't care how you make your living, this person needs help. And we're going to require that you do it. In other words, when we say your parnasa comes first, that's where you're not talking about saving somebody in a case of abject poverty. It's just somebody who wants a loan to be able to get going. So we're not going to compel you to give that to him without any interest at all. Then either you do your heter iska or you say, I'm sorry, I can't help. But when it comes to somebody in direct and immediate need, then it's tzedakah and then you do provide it.
That's what you just said. Gave three examples.
Yeah. Because there is a limitation. Meaning, let's take the examples that I gave, the caterer, right? So the caterer is within his rights to say, I don't give away my meals for free, when the shul comes to him and says, we would like you to cater our kiddush. He's within his rights to say, there's a shiva business that goes on, and we provide meals for people during shiva. I don't want to be the one to do that. This is my parnasa. On the other hand, if there's a person starving at his door, he doesn't have the right to say it's my parnasa.
The example you gave is someone who can't afford.
Yeah, so it's probably a bad example. I think that's a bad example. I think I need to make it more clearly. I need to draw a clear line between the case of immediate direct need for tzedakah and the case of which is just people who want to break because what we're doing is a good deed. That's, I think you do need to make that distinction. Okay. So also, if one's living is via lending as an investment and therefore getting proceeds, we will not obligate him to lend for free. Same idea. Again, assuming you're not talking about an immediate tzedakah case. If you take a look at footnote Lamed Dalet now.
Isn't this the same as the first line?
The first line is lending to non-Jews and charging ribbis. The second one is investing with Jews. If his normal business is halvala akum beribis, the difference between second line and first line is the first line is where he normally lends to non-Jews for interest, and the second one is where he normally lends to Jews and does it as an investment. That's the difference. So take a look, please, at Lamed Dalet. The reason why I would have thought there might be a difference is because I would have argued that lending to a Jew as a heter iska has an element of tzedakah to it already. That would have been the potential claim. But take a look at what he does here. He quotes the Avos Chesed as his source, that's the Chafetz Chaim. And then he says, V'ayin la'el, see our discussion earlier, shenechleku achronim le'inyan hakdamas yisrael la'akum, we had a debate as to whether you give to a Jew first or to a non-Jew first. Umashma, but it sounds like, and what he's referring to is back at footnote Lamed Beis, but it sounds like, Shafilu ledas ha-Megillas Esther, even within the view of the Megillas Esther was the one who said that even if there's a great financial difference, nonetheless, you have to lend the Yisrael before you lend the Akum. That was the Megillas Esther statement. He says, even according to him, Eino chayiv lahaktim li Yisrael b'china medava meruba ela legabe Akum. V'hainu midi itzrich kra. Ava legabe Yisrael be'iska. Efshu she'eino chayiv lahafsid kum. He says, the hierarchy the Megillas Esther gave was lend to the Yisrael, right? Lend to the Jew, and do so. Lend to the Jew, and do so for free, even if it means that you won't be able to lend to the Akum and charge interest to him, and even if it means there'll be a big difference in what your proceeds were going to be. That was his original statement, and the reason why he said it is because I had two psukim that talk about putting the Jew first. One is the Ger Tosha before the Nachri, and the other one was Es Ha'ani Imach, the pauper who is with you, a member of your tribe, is the one who comes first. So, but he says that's only because it's lending a Jew versus lending the Akum. It's a clear cut family versus beyond split. He says if you're dealing with this case here, where it's Jew for Iska versus Jew without Iska, then he says even the Megillas Esther would agree you can do the Iska first, you can do the investment first, because you're still helping out at Yisrael, you're still helping out family. If it wasn't really help, then the Yisrael wouldn't be accepting the deal. That's one view. Okay, so according to this view, which is associated with the Megillas Esther, which he is associated with the Chafetz Chaim as well, lending to a Jew as an investment, making a profit, may precede lending to a Jew and not charging interest at all. Assuming it's not an immediate tzedakah type of a situation. Aval, but he continues to say, however, the Pella Yoetz Erech Halva, Rabbi Lazar Papo, in his Pella Yoetz, under the heading of loans, Kasav Shehu Adin Kisheha Ashir Rotze Beiska Ba'ani Bechinam Ani Kodem. He says, if you have a wealthy person who wants your investment, and you have a needy person who wants it as straight tzedakah, as a loan that he will not have any interest on, the pauper comes first. Even though it's not an immediate life-saving case, it sounds like. Even though lending to the wealthy, we've said, is a mitzvah, it could be it's not such a mitzvah if you're structuring it as an investment and you're going to make something off of it. It's not quite the same thing, even if the wealthy person needs the money right now. He ends up saying something straightforward. He says, Miu hakol lefi ha'inyan. The bottom line is going to be, it depends on the circumstances at hand. Shema ani rotze halva ledivar mosaros. Ve'ashir tzarech l'shaling l'bal chovo kdei shalavo lo yavo lidei busho uchlima v'shal l'hafsid emunaso. He says, if your choice is between a pauper who wants a luxury and a wealthy person who is wealthy but needs to pay it off in order to avoid embarrassment or to avoid losing his credit rating, whatever it is, then the wealthy person is first because he is an ani right now. He's a needy person right now. Remember that the terms needy and wealthy are relative terms. Someone who needs money right now for a necessity is needy. I don't care how much is in his bank account. It doesn't make a difference. If he has $1 million, but he needs $1,000,001, then he's needy. That's just the way it works. So that's his statement, is you really have to look at the case at hand, and the guiding principle, therefore, is going to be who is in the greatest need. That's really what's going to dictate what you're going to do. Ode Kas Asav. He then quotes further from the... Yeah.
Because you've really changed the...
Yes. What Ani now means, it appears, is person in need. Not a person who is living below the poverty line, a person in need. We did draw a distinction early on in our first or second week between a wealthy person who doesn't have access to his assets right now and therefore is truly needy, and a wealthy person who has access to assets but wants to make an investment for which his assets are insufficient. And we said that person is wealthy. He's not called needy. The fact that he wants to do something doesn't make him a needy and unny person. What he's doing now, I don't think is so far off, but he has added to the reasons why we might call this person indigent. It isn't simply he's away from his funds and therefore can't afford dinner. It's also he needs to pay off something now or lose his credit rating or to suffer shame, and he doesn't have sufficient funds in order to do that right now. That would be the case. What about, and this is one that he hasn't really addressed explicitly, what about the fellow who has it but it's in hard assets and he doesn't want to liquidate them because it's a bad time to do so? Right? The land market is weak right now. He has enough land that he could easily sell off some of his land and then pay this off himself. He doesn't have the cash. He has land. But if you make him do that, he's going to take a hit on the land. Do you classify him as needy or do you classify him as wealthy?
Well, it's a hit off that you bought a land. Say $1 million.
Okay.
It's worth $1 million.
Speak up.
But he knows in the long term it'll be worth 1 point.
So that's a really good question. How do we define loss? Byron asks, what if he bought it for $1 million? Actually, not exactly the way you said it. I'll try to do it the way you said it. Right now, if he sells it off, he's going to get $1 million for it. It's really worth 1.1, but he's doing a fire sale. He needs to get his money now. And he knows that in the long run, it could be worth $1.5 million if he can only wait it out. Is that your case?
He wouldn't lose his return.
Right. That's the key, is that what he wants is profits. It's not that he's going to lose what he initially invested. Classically in halacha, we do distinguish between davar ha'aved, where I lose what I have now, versus not gaining. Right? So for example, on Chol HaMoed, if there's something that I need to purchase, or an asset that I have that's dropping in value, then I'm allowed to make the purchase in order to avoid a loss. Right, to avoid a loss. That's different from, hey, there's a great opportunity that just came up. If I invest now, I could multiply my money. Where if I don't invest now, I didn't lose anything. I just didn't take advantage of the opportunity. So you're right, we do make such distinctions. I'm not sure how to view it here. I'm not sure how to do it. He continues with Od Kasav, about 7 lines up from the bottom, 6 lines up. Od Kasav, Chafetz Chaim also wrote.
I don't understand the distinction. So we're going to lend money to someone who, if we don't lend him money, may lose what he has now. Not that he may. Is that the situation? Why were we drawing a distinction between losing what we have now and profit?
Because we were trying to define better at what point a wealthy person is considered needy. So the question is, what if I gave the statement that a wealthy person who has assets and just doesn't want to liquidate them really doesn't strike me as being needy.
Right.
But there's a possibility of distinguishing between someone who doesn't want to liquidate them, because if he does, he'll take a loss, and someone who doesn't want to liquidate them because he knows if he holds on to them, he's going to have a greater gain later on.
Right, but what if we said about the person who doesn't want to liquidate assets because he doesn't want to lose, as he needs?
So that's all part of the question.
So you don't know whether either category is needed.
Correct.
I thought you were drawing a distinction.
Well, there is a distinction to be made. You could say the person who will lose by liquidating now is needy, but the person who simply will fail to gain the anticipated profit is not needy. It's possible to draw a line between them, but you could easily put both of them in the wealthy person category.
I wonder if the market will play a factor, though, because in 2007, everyone had assets that were going down in value.
Right.
So it wouldn't have been you would be hard pushed to find anyone that wasn't in that category. Well, if anyone had assets, I would say they'd be in that category.
It depends on what they want to do with them. It isn't simply about having assets. It's about, I have them, I'd rather not sell them off, because I want to borrow instead. And the question of, does that make a person an ani? Well, in 2007, they all were aniim. But there also was no corner it was about to turn.
Maybe none of them are. If the whole of our community is in the same boat,
so
maybe none of them.
We define ani not based on peer group, but based on whether you can afford food. We haven't given a precise definition of how much food for at what period of time, but it's based on ability to afford to take care of your family's basic needs. We could, there's no such thing as saying that we're on a curve. Automatically, the top X percent are wealthy. It doesn't work that way.
So you're saying wealthy is ability
to feed the family in a nutshell. I mean, that's an oversimplification, but that's the basic standard. But then the question becomes, again, we go back to that person who has the means, theoretically, but isn't going to spend them. Or the person who's not in that kind of an uni category where it's immediate tzedakah. You know, we've created these categories and grades of need for your assistance. But let me state it, maybe this is a good way to frame it. You could look at the assistance that we provide as tzedakah, in the sense of, this person needs food, we're going to provide them with the ability to feed the family. But there's clearly another level here of chesed, which is not about tzedakah, but it's still a mitzvah. Lending a person the money to be able to go on in his business is a mitzvah. We've made that very clear. But it's not the immediate, this person is in danger of collapse. Right? That was just what we said in our first bit. Right? When we said in the very beginning, we said the fellow who makes his money lending to Akum and charging interest does not need to lend to people for free unless he's dealing with a bona fide ani. But if he's not dealing with a bona fide ani, it's still a mitzvah. It's just not something we obligate him to do. So we really do have gradations here. The problem is the Pesach Choshen is really not going to make it all that clear. He's going to leave it a little bit vague. So we're trying to piece it together over the course of several comments. Od Kasav, he also wrote, he's quoting the Chafetz Chaim, Divadai shalom nomar di Yisrael b'chidam kodem la'akum b'sachar, ela l'mi she'irchev Hashem ez givulo, v'yesh lo kidei chayav mimakom acher. He says, if you have a Jew who has two choices, he can lend to a Yisrael for nothing, or he can lend to an Akum in charge. He says, we're never going to tell him to lend for free to the Yisrael, unless Hashem has broadened his borders and he has enough to live from other resources. But if the profit that he is taking, is what he needs for his survival, then his survival has precedence. Ah, but he says, da aka. He says, this is the problem. The door is now open to say that everything is needed for the sake of my livelihood. And he will find an exemption from lending for free. Right? Once you say to him, well, if you really need it, then you're not obligated to lend for free. So he's always going to say, I really need it. Because I really need this, and I really need this, and I really need that. Hello, Elohim, Yachgar Zos. So if this guy Choshen says, that's okay, God will be the one to sort it out. God knows what a person is capable of and what a person is not capable of. So that's the rule, and the execution is for us to do. So, that part clear? I recognize that there's vagueness here in terms of the definition of Ashir and Ani, but what he's doing is giving us principles to work with. And one principle that he's given us is that when it comes to lending to to an Akum and charging versus lending to a Yisrael for free, we have in fact the Machlokes. The Chafetz Chaim saying, on the one hand, you can lend to the Akum and charge, and then on the other hand, you have the Pele Yoetz who says, no, lending to the Yisrael in fact has priority, and then in terms of lending for Iska, where it's really an investment, he says if you're an investor, you don't have to now start lending to people for free. But in the footnote, we saw that, well, that's not necessarily so. It depends on the level of need that's involved and the degree to which you are doing a mitzvah with your investment, because the person needs the money, versus the degree to which you are doing a mitzvah with your loan, because the person really needs the money. So all of these are factors that have to be weighed. You can't simply answer any of these questions with a yes or no. Well, in terms of his personal need, yes. There are different. We're weighing a lot of people's needs at this point, right? We're weighing also the potential recipient's needs. But in terms of my own state as either lender or investor, and whether I can afford to extend the loan, frankly, it's like every tzedakah calculation we make. The only difference between this and another tzedakah calculation is that here you're doing a mitzvah either way. In other words, normally when people make their tzedakah calculations, it's I'm holding an amount of money in my hand, and the question is, do I use it to help somebody else or do I keep it for myself? Here, your calculation is, do I use this to help someone in a way that I'm getting nothing back, or do I use it to help someone in a way that I'm going to get that I'm actually in the long run going to profit by doing it as an investment? Which makes the temptation, I think, to say, well, I'll do it as an investment, much stronger, because I'm doing a mitzvah. You follow? It's like what they tell you when you're learning yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. After your first few months in yeshiva, this is normal, that happens only in yeshivas that I'm familiar with. We hit like October, November, December, and guys start to stay up really, really late at night in yeshiva. They're staying up until 1, 2 in the morning, and just going, learning constantly. And eventually they hit a burnout point, and they crash for a couple of days, and then they sort of work their way back to an equilibrium. That's the norm. And at one point, your rebbeim start to warn you and say, you know, staying up is actually the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is trying to keep you from learning by pushing you to learn more. Because he knows that you can't sustain the pace, and then you're going to burn out, and you'll lose your time from learning, and you'll be worse off than you were. But it's a very compelling Yetzer Hara, because he's telling you to do a mitzvah. He's telling you to learn. That's what's going on here. I have the opportunity to lend to somebody free and clear. I have the opportunity to invest with somebody, and either way, I can say it's a mitzvah. So that's it's a very tricky balance to try to figure out. At what point am I really economically safe, and therefore I can really just lend it without charging? And at what point am I justified in saying, no, I want to charge interest? Or I need to charge interest, really. It's not a want to. Charge interest, meaning make an investment and so on.
With this statement, it's just a real strange
Well, that's not an out. If anything, it's a warning.
I'm never going to lend somebody what's going to happen? Why should I stand that out? Why should I go down the other route?
I see him giving a warning, right? I see him saying, you can make whatever evaluation you need, and if your assessment is you need to do it as an investment, but you should know Hashem is watching. I take it as a warning. He's saying, you should know you're not the sole judge on this decision. I look at it as a warning. Hello, Elokim Yechkar Zos. These are potent words. That's why I would see it. Okay. Let's go to Yudalit. Yudalit's a little easier. good. She'ikar parnasaso v'kach. We go from someone who lends money or invests money for a living to someone who runs a store for a living. Eino chayev lases harasa b'hakava. So he's not obligated to run the tabs for people on his merchandise. You can't say to him, "Well, it's tzedakah, therefore you have to give me store credit to you have to give me a line of credit." Yeah. So if they choose to do it, if that's standard practice, that in the makolet they keep they keep lines of credit for people, matovu manoim, that's wonderful. But he's saying you can't compel somebody to do it. Okay. Look, it's wonderful. Yeah. No. When was I in a position to take advantage of this, unfortunately? In yeshiva, I wasn't going to the makola.
No, of course the city does it. Of course the city does it.
I mean, it's a wonderful thing to do. What he's saying is you're not obligated to, for reasons that we're about to see. Take a look, please, at the footnote, Lamed Vav. He quotes you the Abbas Chesed, although the footnote is wrong. It says Siv Ches, it's Siv Hey. But in Abbas Chesed, Bergbe Siv Hey, Mikama Ta'amim. He says there are various reasons for why this is why you're not obligated to run this this tab for people. The reason he wrote Ches is actually if you open up an Abbas Chesed, you will see it's mislabeled on the page. It says Ches, where it should say Hey, some ink ran or something at some point. But in any case, first of all, the Kaven Sheikar Parnasaso, Bamesha Konis Chora Tzmuras Masha Mocher, Vim Yakif Lo Yucha Liknos Chora. He says the first point is this store owner needs to buy more merchandise. He needs inventory. The only way he can buy more inventory is if he has cash from selling off his previous inventory. So you're hampering his business by running up a tab. If he gives the tab, he can't buy new merchandise, and therefore his business comes to a standstill. That's number one. What do you mean?
So the point of it all would be that no, he doesn't run that risk. That's not higher. That's how he makes his money. If he runs the risk of losing business himself, then that's not his. That's what he learned before.
Right. That's not what he says.
You're not obligated to lose money to...
Right, and he's not saying that. That's not what you're right. I understand exactly what you're saying. We would have said, just like the fellow before who has a business in lending, we're not going to obligate him then to extend interest-free loans. Right? So to here, the store owner is not obligated to run up the tab for people. And he's saying, no, that's not why. Reason number one why is because you can't run a business that way. But look at reason number two. V'od, and further, this I found fascinating. Da'akavas chanut eina bichlal mitzvas mitzvas halva. He says that's not within the mitzvah of lending. It's not called a loan. Why is not called a loan? So the answer is not a logical answer. The answer is based on a source. If you look up the Chafetz Chaim, it is Abbas Chesed. He refers you to a Mishnah in Shviyas, which I brought you on your sheet, source Aleph. The Mishnah in Shviyas says, Dan, you don't need to use your digital version, you've got this. Shviyas mishametes es hamilva b'shtar v'shalo b'shtar. Shviyas, meaning Shemitah, which cancels out loans that are due, will cancel debts whether they were written in documents or not written in documents. It doesn't make a difference. But then the Mishnah continues to say, Hakapas chanus eina mishametes. A tab in a store is not nullified by Shemitah. V'masa milva? Unless you turn it into an actual loan, where you say to him, okay, now you've run up a tab for $1,000, let's structure this as a $1,000 loan, and here's the day that it's due, and the whole bit. Then it's a loan. But when it is a store tab, we do not look at it as a loan at all. So the Chafetz Chaim says it's not a logical thing necessarily. You may be able to come up with a logical explanation for why X and not Y, but it's a mission in Shviyas that says that as far as Shemitah is concerned, running up a tab is not called borrowing money. It's something else. It's not called a loan. And because it's not called a loan, guess what? Lending it does not fulfill the mitzvah, or running up a tab does not fulfill a mitzvah of lending. Therefore, there's no obligation for the store owner to run a tab. You follow?
Well, no, I'm trying to justify it. In my mind, I can think it's a debt, not a loan. It's money that you owe, but it wasn't
well,
to you.
Well, we have other cases like this, of owing money, but it's not a loan. For example, I'm playing ball with somebody outside your house, and I throw the ball wildly, and it breaks through a window. I owe you money for the window, but it's not a loan. It's a debt. And for you to allow me to not pay immediately isn't mitzvah's halva. And Shemitah comes along, I still owe you the money. It's not a loan.
Which mitzvah?
Being nice, v'atlo v'echa kamocha, chesed, you know, generic.
Whenever, I don't know if it applies here, but there's, it gives two reasons.
Yeah.
And they're very different. But why does he give the second reason? Why wasn't the first one sufficient?
Why does he need the second reason? Why wasn't the first one that this is his parnasa good enough? I would say there actually are very different applications of these reasons. Right? Imagine the case that we gave of the person who is truly indigent. And so we said, even if it's your parnasa, you're obligated to help. Right? In the previous seif. So, if I take the first explanation, this is your parnasa, I say, well, too bad, you're still obligated. If on the other end I say, this isn't even called a loan, then you're not obligated. You may be obligated to give it to him for free, because the person's starving. It may be a separate obligation. But running up a tab is not called halva. It's not called lending. In the same way that if he throws a ball, an indigent person throws a ball through my window, so it's a choice for him between buying food and paying me for the window, it's a good thing for me to say, don't pay for the window right now, get food for yourself. But it's not halva.
Yeah, so I would say the hakafas chanas halva. That would be sufficient.
Right. So that would have been sufficient that you don't need the first reason. Unless he wants to mention the first reason because it's consistent with the general policy about Parnassa, and he feels like that has to be mentioned because it's so. You're right, the second reason seems more powerful than the first. He actually says, when the Pesach Choshen uses the words Mikama Ta'amim, those aren't his own words. That's the Chafetz Chaim, he says that it's Mikama Ta'amim, and then he only brings these two. So I don't know if there's even an additional thought process going on he doesn't even get into. But he continues to say, Umikal Makom still, Siyem, he concluded, the Chafetz Chaim concluded, Shem Ba Ani, Yakif Lome'at, Lahachayos Navsho, Vikayem Bazel, Kofanim, Mitzvahs, Vechzakta Bo. Going back to the point we just made, if someone is truly indigent, so you should, we're on the third line, you should give him a tab, and you will fulfill not the mitzvah of lending, but the mitzvah of Vechzakta Bo, of strengthening people or holding on to people who are indigent. It's a separate mitzvah of Chesed. It's not alone. V'lo chilei ka'avas chesed bein socher gadol v'ashir lebein chen v'ni ani. He says, you know, the avas chesed, the Chafetz Chaim, does not distinguish between a big merchant who does multi-million-dollar business and some poor storekeeper. They're all given the same standard. V'tzarech iyun l'maisa. But he says you have to examine that in practice. It would be hard to say if someone is doing very well in his business and he does mega business, say that he should not extend a tab just because technically this isn't a loan is a hard thing for us to say. Of course he should be doing this.
Well, yeah. See the other side, that these mega businesses have mega outlays. They've got all the staff to pay.
True.
And they have to invest in the next store.
Right. So he didn't just say Socher Gadol, a big business, but he also said Asher, he's wealthy. So maybe that helped, but you're right. Generally speaking, as you scale up the business, you also scale up the responsibilities and the obligations.
And the risk.
And the risk. True.
That throws out the first original first reason. Right?
Sorry?
That throws out the original first reason.
The Iker Parnasaso. Well, it depends.
Because he has to buy it.
Right. Again, it depends on how much he's depending on this, you know, for it. And then, of course, the other question is, once you tell him he should do this, it's not one person. It's going to be 1,000 people. And at a certain point, it is going to throw a wrench in his business. So that cheshbon has to be, that count has to be made as well, how long is he going to be obligated to do this and for how many people? Does he have to sit there evaluating every day, what am I able to do? Possibly. Quite possibly. But then he continues and he says, Aval, however, Benesivos Hamishbat, Simonai in Beis, it's Biurim Sivka and Ches, Mashmashagamba Kavas Chanos Mitzvah Ka'avid. He says, I'm going to bring you a different point of view. Rabbi Yaakov Lorberbaum of Lisa authored the Benesivos Hamishbat on Shulchan Aruch on Choshen Mishpat, the section of Shulchan Aruch that deals with financial law. Take a look on your sheet at source base and look at what he has to say. He's dealing with a completely different topic, but you'll see how it relates. Not completely different, different. Ubezvina charifa she'ein lamocher hana'a. If a person is dealing with zvina charifa literally means sharp business. And what he means is a product that everybody wants to buy. Okay, something that everybody is looking to buy. It is going to go fast. So she'ein la mocher hana'a, so that for the seller, there's no particular benefit from selling to this guy. I could have just easily sold it to somebody else. Umakif letovas halokeach, and yet he says, I'm going to sell it to this guy, and I'm going to run a tab for this guy. So this guy is, I'm going to sell it to him on credit. In other words, I have a product that everybody wants. Okay, it's the beginning of the snowy season, and I've got winter tires, and everybody's looking to buy winter tires, and I can find easily another customer. If he can't pay me now, I can sell to somebody else. But I'm going to let him buy it on credit. So in such a case, he says, Nira, it appears, Dilamanda Svirale Pruta de Rabbi Yosef, I'm jumping the brackets for a moment, Havi Shomer Sachar, Demali Shelva Maus Oschara. This is a fascinating piece. The Pruta de Rabbi Yosef, the coin of Rabbi Yosef, is the following. There's a mitzvah of returning lost objects. Let's say I find your fill-in-the-blank lost object. I found your sheep. And I'm holding on to the sheep, waiting to give it back to you. While I am taking care of your sheep, I am engaged in the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, returning lost objects. There's a rule. Osek b'mitzvah, pater min ha-mitzvah. If you're involved in a mitzvah, you're exempt from other mitzvahs. Now, we say if you can fulfill both, you're supposed to fulfill both. But based on that, Rabbi Yosef says, if you are guarding someone else's lost object, waiting to give it back to them, you are exempt from the mitzvah of tzedakah. Giving away a pruta, giving away a coin, because you're already doing a mitzvah. And if so...
That's the general principle of being involved with one mitzvah, you don't need...
Exactly. So therefore, he says, you are not guarding the object for free, you're guarding the object for pay, because you're not giving tzedakah during that period of time. That's pruta de Rabbi Yosef. The idea is, you are being paid for guarding this lost object and the fact that you are exempt from giving tzedakah, and therefore every person who's guarding a lost object is a shomer sachar. So that's the Rabbi Yosef's principle. So Nesivos pulls that and says, well, in that case, if this guy wants to buy the object from me, and as a kindness to him, I'm letting him buy it on credit, and I'm holding on to his collateral, I am a shomer sachar in holding on to his collateral, because what I'm doing is fundamentally a mitzvah, and it exempts me from other mitzvahs. Demali shehil v'mos oschara. Because what's the difference, excuse me, whether I lend him money or whether I am lending him for merchandise, meaning I'm giving him the merchandise until he pays me. Either way, I am engaged in a mitzvah currently. Bitravayu mitzvah ka'avid. In either case, I'm doing a mitzvah. V'taloi lefir ozenei hadayan. And he says, evaluating whether this is something you could sell to anybody or whether you need this customer is something that the judge in the Beis Din is going to have to figure out. Because this goes to a Beis Din in the event that something happens to the item. If something happens to the item, was I a shomer chinam watching it for free with only a minimal level of responsibility? Or am I a shomer sachar watching it for pay with a higher degree of responsibility? That's the question that comes into this. So the bottom line is, though, going back now to the Pisrei Choshen, he says, the Nesivos, by raising this question of whether you're a shomer chinam or whether you are a shomer sachar, mashma, the end of the fourth line, mashma shegam ba'akavas chanus mitzvah ka'avid. It sounds like he believes you are doing a mitzvah by selling it to this person on credit, right? Otherwise, this whole discussion about being exempt from other mitzvahs and so on doesn't begin. Clearly, the Nesivos believes. Hello, David. The this is the magic of a window. The idea is that this is a mitzvah when you sell it to him on credit. Otherwise, the nisivos' question doesn't begin. Against what I saw from the Amas Chesed. You follow? Al Kopanim, Bisvina Harifa, at the least if you're dealing with something that everybody wants to buy. That's what he writes. Vakach Kasim Apelayoit Zerachalva, and he says the Pelayoit agrees as well. So what it means is, we have a machlokas on whether allowing someone to run up a tab in your store is a mitzvah or not. The Chavetz Chaim says no, it's not a mitzvah at all. It's not even called a loan. And he proves it to you from the Mishnah in Shavuos. That's one side. And then on the other side, you have the Nesivos, as well as the Peleoids, who say, no, this is a mitzvah of lending to somebody to help him out, and therefore you are indeed engaged in a mitzvah loan in doing this. That's a basic machlokes achronim, is running up a store tab. Is that a mitzvah or not? There's more to talk about, and there's more depth to go into of why is it a mitzvah, why wouldn't it be, what's the difference? We talk about a little bit the idea of debts that are not loans, but there's really more that could be said, but I think I'm going to call it with that for now. Remember, please, that next week we do not meet. There will